still existed, I would gladly make that my screensaver. They're not, though.
Part of the problem. That's what you are.
Yeah, part of I really the am. Hey, are you kidding? If it's baseball player butts, I'm proud to be part of the problem.
Alligators.
Oh my God. I totally know this. Oh, where are my notes? Can I? Nope. It's going to bother me. I don't know it, but I know it. It's going to bother me.
We figured out how alligators survive a deep freeze because there was a video released that showed alligators in a frozen swamp with their nostrils sticking out of the ice. So this is what
That's just the coolest.
This is what they do. Alligators do this thing that's similar to hibernation. Like when it gets really, like below 42 degrees, they really can't function. Mm-hmm. So what they do is they stick their nose up out of the top of the water and they just basically shut down. And they will stay there frozen until the water thaws, and then they go back to being alligators again.
How have humans not figured out this technology yet?
Alligators are smart. That's a smart, and it's like
that's a smart reptile right there.
The interesting thing about it is where they live, it is extremely rare for it to get cold enough for things to completely freeze.
Yet they know what to do in the.
How is this hard coded into the brain that they know this? You know, like, oh, I just got to stick my nose out and I'll survive.
Hey, we humans are so far behind, D.
I'm surprised we don't have a bunch of 12-year-olds running around out there dropping pepper in the alligators' noses just to see, you know. Don't do that. Don't do that.
Vermont.
Sucks.
No, shut up. Vermont's great in so many ways.
Vermont. It's got cheese.
It does. It has maple syrup.
It's got cheese and
rich hippies. I can't believe you said sucks. Vermont is the maple syrup capital of the world. How can you hate Vermont?
They're good.
Solely based on that they produce maple syrup.
The rich hippies are ruining it is the problem. Oh, God, Vermont. I don't.
This is today.
Today, I don't even remember which surveys came out today, so.
Well, Vermont Senate passed a bill today legalizing recreational marijuana use.
Oh, that I definitely didn't see.
Which would make the state the first in the nation to do so through the legislative process rather than a ballot initiative. And the governor is expected to sign the bill, which passed the Democratic-controlled Senate by a voice vote.
Is Jeff Sessions moving his federal agents in to intercept the marijuana even as we speak?
Oh, I'm sure it's probably happening. But for now, I think that myself and those like me just want to bask in the glory of this small victory that will probably be run into the ground by a bunch of heads up their butts conservatives.
Charlie Baker, by the way, I got to give the governor of Massachusetts some credit. I'm hard on the guy. Because he doesn't strike me as being terribly plugged into anything. He's just sort of there. And it's like, hi, I'm the governor. And everybody's like, hey, it's the governor. And he just walks in and waves. And everybody's like, hey, it's the governor. You can't be that.
Hey, I voted for that guy.
You can't be that liked if you're actually doing something. Is the point that I'm making.
Remember Ronald Reagan?
Reagan actually wasn't actually doing anything. Everybody else in the administration was.
That's what I'm saying. Everyone loved Reagan because he just kind of hung out there and was like, ooh, jelly beans, yum.
But Charlie Baker actually came out yesterday and condemned Jeff Sessions and the Massachusetts federal attorney for saying that they were going to prosecute people for marijuana. And rather forcefully. And said, look, the people of Massachusetts voted for this. We've spoken. And I asked, and if the Massachusetts federal attorney lacks resources, as he has told us that he does, then he should put those resources into stopping things that are killing people in Massachusetts, namely opioids. And it's like,
oh, I did hear that. Yeah.
All right. Two points for you, Gov. Yeah.
Yeah. That's the thing is that, I mean, and we could do an entire show with me ranting about how ridiculous it is that marijuana is illegal. But
it's not here.
At the end of the day, it's federally illegal.
Yeah.
And just based on comparing it to alcohol and comparing it to opioids, there are opioids that are legal that are being prescribed to people. That are
at an alarming rate.
That are killing them.
Yeah.
I grew up in Quincy, and I've had, I think I'm up to 10 friends who have died now from opioid overdoses. And obviously, I haven't spoken to them in years, but it's quite annoying. Well, it's quite annoying. That was the biggest understatement I've ever said. But no, the Vermont bill, though, it's cool. It's anyone 21. It's exactly how it should be. Anyone 21 or older can possess up to an ounce of marijuana, can have two adult plants and four immature plants, so ones that haven't produced buds yet, as of July 1st. And it doesn't say anything about, like, actually selling the drug. And I still think it's dumb that we call it a drug. But they developed a commission to try to decide how to tax and regulate it so that that's possible.
I think practically speaking, marijuana has been legal in Vermont for a number of years.
I mean, it's
in the sense that no one is going to prosecute you for using it.
For the last 10 years, I mean, when I was in high school and all of us were applying to college, the two biggest potheads in our school,
UVM,
besides me, were like UVM, Champlain.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's not rocket science.
I work with a couple of UVM grads. I know what's going on up there.
And they're probably like, hey, Derek.
Yeah, they are.
Are you having a good morning?
They are. They are. I love them dearly, but wouldn't trust them to get anything done quickly.
Hey, I get stuff done.
I said quickly.
Okay.
I wouldn't trust them to get anything done quickly.
I'll give you that one.
Mark Wahlberg
is a jerk face.
Yes. But do we know today's reason why?
Oh, no. I don't know the latest reason that Mark Wahlberg's a jerk face.
Well,
I just know the growing up near him reasons.
You may have heard that Michelle Williams and Ridley Scott and allegedly Mark Wahlberg did their reshoots of All the Money in the World for free. As it turns out, Mark Wahlberg did not do his reshoot for free. He was paid $1.5 million for that reshoot.
Oh my God.
You know how much money Michelle Williams got? $1,000.
$1,000.
You know what the real killer is in this whole thing? They have the same agent. So Mark Wahlberg apparently cajoled his way into $1.5 million that he totally does not need or deserve. I'm guessing, you're inconveniencing me over the holidays. You know, it's Thanksgiving. Massachusetts invented that. That's going to cost you some money.
Yes, according to USA Today, it works out to Michelle Williams being paid less than 1% of Mark Wahlberg.
They have the same agent. And apparently Michelle Williams and Ridley Scott did not know about this.
Oh my God. I don't understand. Like, we were talking about how Louis C.K.'s career is going to survive. We were talking about all of these people whose careers should be murdered by things we have over the last several shows. The fact that Mark Wahlberg is still successful is baffling to me. Because this guy, I mean, he literally, even before he was famous, even before he was Marky Mark and the Funky Bunch, he was just some jerk kid from the streets of Boston.
Yeah.
He blinded a man.
Yeah.
WMFO
Medford.
Yeah, WMFO Medford. Important
to say that.
But it's like the fact, how was he still getting passes? You know, I remember...
He apparently is going to be the highest paid American actor for 2017.
That's disgusting.
Mostly because he was in that Transformers disaster over the summer. And I don't have anything personally against the guy. He seems to have grown up and turned into a somewhat reasonable adult. But when you're getting $1.5 million for 10 days of reshoots and Michelle Williams is getting nothing, first of all, Michelle Williams, fire your agent.
Yeah,
that's the first
absolutely.
Thing.
Absolutely. And
fire
Michelle
your
Williams
agent.
Has earned the word I can't say on the radio out of getting paid well.
Yeah.
She came from being, like, she got her big break being on Dawson's Creek and has since done such incredibly worthy, like, really respectable
And she is amazing in that film, by the way.
She is amazing in every film that she does. She's amazing. One of my favorite movies from growing up, even, is Dick. Have you ever seen that? That movie is so funny. But, yeah, Michelle Williams has earned everyone's respect and certainly money.
Hopefully,
this is disgusting.
Hopefully this encourages someone to think twice about casting Mark Wahlberg in the future. Because that you need to be knocked down a few pegs when you pull something like that.
For real. Oh, bad my look. Goodness.
Bad look.
I cannot. God, I'm sorry. I'm going to reel over that for like 10 minutes. let's see. New York City Subway.
New York City Subway. Rockefeller Center station was closed yesterday after it filled with smoke. Forcing everybody to evacuate.
But it's actually not what I was.
But you're looking at me as if that's not the story.
No, I'm sorry. I should have been more specific. New York City subway bombing.
Oh, the Pakistani immigrant, the Bangladeshi immigrant.
I was going to say, he was actually from Bangladesh.
The Bangladeshi immigrant was indicted today for attempting to blow up people. That was under Grand Central Station in one of the...
No, it was under Port Authority by Times Square.
Near Penn Station. It was one of the big connector tunnels.
Yeah, it was... So it was... It was in the passageway near the Port Authority bus terminal, which is it actually connects Grand Central Station to Times Square, essentially. Yep. There's like a, they call it the Silver Line, a shuttle that goes there. He's 27 years old, which being 4 years older than that, it like blows my mind.
Yeah, but I think he was living in Flatbush, and that'll make anybody crazy.
Well, the explosive device that he made, which was constructed with instructions that were found on the internet, was made from a pipe, a 9-volt battery, and Christmas lights.
Oh, yeah.
Because you got a holiday theme.
Kids.
Your terrorist attack.
Kids, the internet bomb instructions don't work.
No, they do not.
They don't work.
Have you not learned anything about our government and how much you hate it? If you want to make an enemy out of somebody, you have to learn everything about them. And that is, the government's included in that if you want to be a U.S. terrorist.
It's really sort of, do you almost want to encourage the kids to use the internet bomb making instructions because they don't work?
Oh, yeah. Well, especially,
you know, but they don't work.
I love he packed it with metal screws to maximize the damage, but he was the only person that was actually seriously injured in the attack. He actually made his first court appearance from video link from the hospital, and he's now in federal jail, but he came to the U.S., in 2011, with the help of two immigration programs. His uncle came first after winning a visa lottery and then sponsored him under a policy that's called chain migration. And Trump actually cites this case as why he wants to dismantle both immigration policies.
Yeah.
Which, again, I, as all of you know, who are regular listeners, I do not condone almost anything that Trump does. But in that case, I'm like, that's not... super off base.
No.
But he began to self-radicalize 3 years ago, but law enforcement said there was he was absolutely not on their radar at all. But he did make two Facebook posts prior to it, one referencing ISIS being great and another saying Trump was terrible. And that's pretty damning evidence.
Well, he had the perfect cover. After he was self-radicalized, he was an angry New York cabbie. And then they all just sort of, you blend in.
I would say, oh yeah. I mean, I've lived in New York. I can understand somebody getting angry.
There are no happy New York cabbies.
I've been super mean to cabbies in New York.
Happy New York cabbie? Nope, that's not a thing. Not a thing. Three billboards. Three billboards outside.
Outside here?
Outside Ebbing, Missouri.
Ebbing, Missouri. Oh, no, I don't know.
You did not watch the Globes the other night.
Oh, no, I care about important things.
You did not. The Globes are an important thing. I got news for you. We got an Oscar show coming up, and you're going to be expected to know this stuff. Three boards outside Ebbing, Missouri took most of the important awards at the Golden Globes.
Oh, yes.
The other night.
Okay. All right. Okay. I know what you're talking about.
Won Best Picture.
Especially because I love Frances McDormand. She's fantabulous.
Won Best Picture Drama. Won Best Actress Drama for Frances McDormand. And Best Supporting Actor Drama for Sam Rockwell. That is going to make them early favorites for the rest of the awards coming up and the Academy Award. Gary Oldman won Best Actor Drama for his Winston Churchill portrayal. And Gary Oldman is guaranteed to win the BAFTA. And it's going to be between him and Daniel Day-Lewis for the Oscar. But the momentum is definitely moving in Gary Oldman's favor right now.
Well,
so
Daniel Day-Lewis has already got one, so.
He's got two, actually.
He's got two. Wait, what movies? I know for that Western one that it was just ridiculous.
There Will Be Blood.
What's the other one?
My Left Foot.
Always better than the right one.
So he's got a couple of them. So there's some early Oscar guidance for you. Keep an eye on three billboards outside Ebbing, Missouri, and Gary Oldman.
Well, Mama wants Peter Dinklage to win something.
Frances McDormand's, I don't know. Annette Bening was not nominated for a Golden Globe, and she is a strong contender as well. But Frances McDormand definitely made a very, very solid case for herself with this movie.
This is my last one, yeah?
Yep.
All right, I have to pick a good one then. Tennessee Priest.
Is he a fan of the Tennessee Titans, who are playing the New England Patriots?
Tennessee Priest.
Tennessee Titans beat the Kansas City Chiefs. Tennessee Priest.
Or pastor, I'm sorry. Tennessee pastor. I forgot that non-Catholic people call it something else.
They're the same. They're like churchy guy at the front of the room.
Church, yeah. The guy with the collar and the stuff.
Yeah, guy in the black robe telling me I'm bad. Tennessee Priest, don't know.
A pastor at a Tennessee megachurch.
Did he bless the Titans?
I don't know if it would really mean much after what I'm about to say.
Okay.
A pastor at a Tennessee megachurch received a standing ovation after admitting to a sexual incident with a high school student 20 years ago.
Oops.
Days after the woman came forward to accuse him of sexual assault. Pastor Andy Savage told the congregation at the High Point Church in Memphis, I do love Memphis, in Sunday in a video that was streamed online. He said that as a college student on staff at a church in Texas more than 20 years ago, I regretfully had a sexual incident with a female high school senior.
So wait, he's in college and she's in high school? This ain't a big deal.
Savage's revelation came 2 days after Jules Woodson went public with her story in a blog post accusing Savage of sexually assaulting her when she was 17 and he was a 22-year-old youth minister in Texas. She said in the post that on a Christian blog that one night Savage offered to drive her home from church but instead took her to a dirt road in an area surrounded by trees and had her perform oral sex on him. She added that she told church leaders about the incident, but that they did not contact authorities, did not tell her parents the extent of what happened, and allowed Savage to resign non-disgraced. Savage did not describe the details of what happened during the service on Sunday, but he said he apologized to Woodson and, quote, accepted full responsibility for his actions.
If we're talking about a 22-year-old and a 17-year-old, how much of this is just 22-year-olds and 17-year-olds doing what people that age are going
to
do?
I think it's the reason that this was important to me is I was an ultra server for like 5 years.
Right.
And there were definitely times where I was never taken advantage of by a priest in any way. Nothing more than a really long hug. I did definitely find myself in situations where I was alone with a priest and there were moments that I'd be like, I feel like something weird might potentially be able to happen. And that's why this story kind of stuck out to me.
But it's one of the uncomfortable truths about the youth pastor and the high school seniors
It's kind of built into the territory. Oh my God, have you seen how cute the youth pastor is?
It's a dating opportunity, and everybody knows it's a dating opportunity, even though it's not supposed to be.
Well, but I think in this situation, it was just as I was talking about with the Louis C.K. thing earlier. I think in this situation, it'd be one thing if they like made out, but the fact that she had to, I don't know if I can say this on the radio, but go down on him.
Yeah.
It again lends itself to the feeling of a male superior, of feeling as though you don't have the ability or the right even to say no.
I would have to know more about the personalities involved in this. You know, because
she's obviously a
this. No, I, well, see, now you've gone too far. I'm not going to say that.
No, Derek, I was joking.
Yeah.
Oh, and by the way, Jules, I was joking. I'm defending you. Being ironic.
How many stories do you hear about first year teachers just out of college who wind up getting involved with high school seniors?
Oh, yeah.
Lots.
That's what I remember. I will never forget. We had this teacher. Hi, Mr. Bianchi. We had this teacher when I was a senior in high school named Mr. Bianchi. He was our calculus teacher. And I went to all-girls Catholic school. And when he first started, he was, like you said, just out of college. He was probably 22 or 23. And he said, so a little bit about me. I like the show Seinfeld. I like bare naked ladies. And he meant the band, but he was speaking to a bunch of 17-year-old girls and said, I like bare naked ladies. And we all burst out laughing. He turned neon red and ran out of the room. So trust me, definitely a role that.
Yeah.
This is a new situation, but it is. I thought it was important just given the current climate.
Oh yeah, and it's like, look, there's you know, there are reasons why, you know, he's in a position of authority, and even with the Romeo and Juliet laws, they make exceptions for that. You know, teachers can't be dating students, youth pastors shouldn't be dating the flock, but as far as the church not reporting it to anybody goes, you're 17 years old, legally you can consent to doing stuff, and he's 22, everybody's going to sit there and say, this is what kids do.
Well, I think that's the thing is that I think that it's not that it was a legal requirement for them to do something about it. Were it not for the fact that she felt that it was something worth reporting.
Yeah.
It'd be one thing if it was, I mean, anyone who's known me for more than a decade knows I've got myself into my fair share of situations. And I've never reported any of them because, you know, it's like I did it on purpose.
Right.
It was whatever.
But you also have zero context.
Except for one, which we've discussed on the show before.
But we also have zero context for her story. We don't know if the two of them were flirting
that's what I'm
spending
saying.
Spending a lot of time together. Did he just out of the blue drive her somewhere and be like, hey, baby, I'm going to show you a new way to worship the Lord? You know, that's a different situation.
Well, that's what I'm trying to say is that the sheer fact that despite how small the gap between their ages were, the sheer fact that she reported it speaks to the situation.
Yeah.
While we know nothing about it, it does speak to the situation in that if it was something that she felt was inappropriate enough to report, I don't think that it was something that was like this hot priest drove me home and we ended up making out. Like, you know what I mean? Like, I feel that the sheer fact that she reported it speaks volumes about the circumstances surrounding
and that's fine.
How it transpired.
That's your truth. You're entitled to own your truth. You're entitled to believe your truth. But when you present your truth, you've got to accept that people, based on their own experience and based on the way that society generally works, are going to measure what you put forward against what we know and what we've seen and experienced in our lives and come to certain conclusions about it. It's not that we don't believe you. It's not that we think you're lying. I think this is a case of too little information versus too much
information.
Yes, absolutely. You know, give me a little bit more to win me over to your side, and then I'll come out and condemn this guy if I need to. But
well, and the sheer fact that he got a standing ovation by his admission of this, leads me to believe that it maybe wasn't as sordid as some of the other stories we've encountered in the last 6 months.
It's also Tennessee. You date your cousin down there. So, you know.
Hey, I love Tennessee.
I love Tennessee, too, but I'm saying a lot of people dating their cousins. That's all I'm saying.
Brian, represent Tennessee. Get it.
Not as many last names as there should be in a state that size. That's the point that I'm making. Final one for you. Football boycott.
Football boycott.
Football boycott.
God, this could mean so many things. You know I don't care about sports.
I know. I don't expect you to get this one.
Yeah, I really don't. Unless it's about wearing black.
No.
That's something
but this
I
is,
heard.
No, this is, this is what I had to talk about.
Get
so,
it, D.
There was a football boycott. Newsblog Aussie.
Was it super special?
Newsblog Aussie and SurveyMonkey got together and they did a telephone survey. So this is an actual, like, we called people real survey.
Yeah, like this is like a thing that.
Not I opted in on an email form. And they asked people, are you a football fan? And of those who admitted that they were football fans, who said, yes, I'm a football fan, 33%, one third, said they deliberately watched less football this past season. That's a third of the audience.
For what reason? Because of the national anthem thing?
They were given multiple choice on the reasons. So you could pick more than one reason. So here, and this is where this gets interesting, because here are the reasons that people gave. 32% said they stopped watching because the president told them to. 32% stopped watching.
That is legitimately the dumbest thing I've ever heard.
Because our orange president told them to. But keep in mind, and I've said this on the show many times before, 32% of this country will get behind any politician reliably.
We need to be a few separate countries. That, I am tired of being associated with people. Like
I don't
that.
Think you ever fix it that way. There's a 32% on your side too, so you can feel good about that.
I don't have a side.
22%.
I have a barrel I cry into.
This is what I love. 22% stopped watching in solidarity with the players kneeling.
That doesn't make any sense either, though.
That's not what the players wanted.
Is that what you're calling my side? Is that the thing that you're referring to as being my side?
So, no. 22% of people stopped watching football because they saw the players kneeling, and they assumed the players wanted them to stop watching football.
So, 22% of people, like, I don't know, were on an overpressurized plane, and it permanently gave them brain damage.
That's
I don't.
One in five. One in five football fans stopped watching.
God, this is what I'm saying. I can't believe now, I'm a citizen of this country.
Remember all those conversations that we had throughout the fall about these protests are being misunderstood and people don't get what this is about. This isn't about disrespecting the flag. Apparently, even the players didn't understand what these protests were doing because 22% of fans. Football fans, people who watch
are
football,
not watching football now.
Stop watching football because you took a knee.
Sorry, this is one of those times that I wish that we were being video recorded because, listeners, you could see that why I haven't spoken in a good 15 seconds is because I've been laughing uncontrollably listening to Derek.
13% stopped watching because they did not care about the games on the air. That number seems very low to me.
That I respect.
13% didn't like the games. It seems low. And I am going to guess that 99% of that 13% lived in New York City and was confronted with Giants games because those were bad games.
And the Jets games.
12%.
Toss the Jets. Yeah,
the Jets actually had a half decent run in the middle of the season.
Yeah, I know. I just hate them.
12%. Stopped watching in solidarity with Colin Kaepernick.
What?
12% stopped watching in solidarity with Colin Kaepernick. Now, 1 in 10 Americans, this is true.
Absurd.
1 in 10 Americans, reliably, is a complete doofus on any given issue. 1 out of every 10 Americans just has a stupid opinion or does something stupid with regard to any given issue. I don't know how we get to 12% here. That's what I'm concerned with. You tell me 10% were in solidarity with Colin Kaepernick, I'm like, well, okay, that makes sense. But It got up to 12%.
I would say that is a lot of people who are football fans to not watch football because of one person.
And I'm going
to
say, by the way, that number probably would have been way higher if Jimmy Garoppolo hadn't gone out to San Francisco and started winning every game that he played. So San Francisco underrepresented in that number. 11% stopped watching because of brain injuries. That's completely legit.
That, I was going to say, is arguably defensible.
Now, here's...
Defensible.
Here's the flip side of the 1 in 10 Americans is a complete doofus in any issue. 1 in 10 Americans is actually well-informed and understands any given issue.
Are you sure?
Yes. Reliable. 10% of Americans know, you know, they may not know everything about...
Oh, now, when you put it as 10%, it seems more likely than 1 in 10.
Yeah, they may not know everything about every issue, but you can put an issue in front of them that they fully understand and fully grasp and can have a reasonable conversation about.
Yeah, and can
about.
Actually... Yeah, I know what you mean.
The fact that we're at 11% here, the plus 1%, is fantastic. That would be a great thing. But it's... outweighed by the plus 2% for Colin Kaepernick, which is a sign that this country is losing its grasp on reality. 8% said the games were boring. And welcome to the new defensive age of the NFL. We got 8 years of this kid. Strap in. Because college football is all about defense now. Most of the teams that made the playoffs were all about defense. The days of quarterbacks raining long bombs all over the field are over. It's all about the D, so you better get used to that. 46% chose a different reason. They were given other as an option as well. And those who chose the open category cited a number of things, including the national anthem protests and opposing players kneeling. So there's all of your reasons, but the one that really jumps out at me is 1 in 5 football fans... stopped watching because they thought the players wanted them to.
That's the one. Every other thing you presented, I've been like, yeah. I mean, some of it's dumb, but is I can put myself in, you know, that whole you don't know someone's story till you walk a mile in their moccasins. Whatever. I can put myself in the mindset, being like, okay, I guess I. Can make sense of you viewing it this way. Them thinking that the people whose livelihood depends upon a fan base wanted them to not be fans anymore. That's just straight up absurdity. Like, I mean, that I can't. I have no
fathomable
way to grasp that.
The NFL is going to have to fix this in the offseason because one of the things that came up late in the season was a level of violence between players that we have not seen in the NFL previously. And these were fist fights and these were bench clearing brawls. And I believe that the tension between players over this national anthem protest was spilling out in a lot of those fights.
Well, and it stands to reason too, to bring up that the thing you said about Colin Kaepernick, it has crossed over into other sports. Where Blake Griffin has come out in support of Colin Kaepernick, which, you know, could be a minor thing were it not for the fact there are lots of people who are basketball fans who are not football fans and maybe watch football sparingly the way I am with baseball, but see Blake Griffin, who is, by the way, Blake, if you're listening, I'm single.
Yeah. Blake's way too smart for you.
I beg your pardon. Blake's I'm way too smart for Blake.
No, Blake's way too... Blake would come in here and own both of us.
Yeah, that's why we would make super babies. But the sheer fact that it got his attention, there are lots of people, as I said, who are just basketball fans who would end up encouraging other people to not watch football anymore as a result of the Colin Kaepernick thing.
Yeah. So, yep, the people stop watching because
Blake's
of players.
He's too smart for me. Shut up.
He's too smart for both of us.
He's not too smart for me. Yes. He's too hot for me, maybe.
So people stopped watching because the players were kneeling, but not for the reason that you think. And boy, Jerry Jones or that guy from Papa John's find out about this, it's going to be pretty unpleasant in the offseason. 855-915-9636 is the telephone number. On the Tell Mikey D is coming up in a little less than 30 minutes. Everything you need to know about the Boston music scene. When we come back, the fire and the fury.
Ay, ay, ay.
Truth bombs raining down from Washington, D.C. We'll find out right after this here on WMFO Medford.
Because if you use drugs, you better leave it alone. Drugs are contagious. They're killers. Every drug is a killer. Stay away from drugs. Drugs will take your life away. And if you want to live, stay away from drugs. Because they are super bad, super bad, super bad, super bad, super bad, super bad.
Okay, gang. So, chances are there'll never be an emergency ever, ever again.
Mm-hmm.
But, just in case, let's talk about a plan.
Okay.
So, who's gonna do what? Anyone? Yeah, okay, perfect. We'll figure it out as we go. So, who is going to grab the go bag?
What's a go bag?
It is a bag we do not have that is filled with things we really, really need in an emergency.
Guess we won't have to worry about it then.
Ah, good point. So, we all know who to call if something happens then, right?
I'd have to call Jill, Devin, Melissa, Karen, and Bruce.
And I will try to call all of you, but Greg doesn't have a cell phone. Dad's phone will have a dead battery.
No doubt.
And Julie will be on the phone with Jill, Devin, Melissa, Karen, and Bruce.
Well, this is great. I am so glad that we don't have a plan.
I know.
Winging It is not an emergency plan. Make sure your kids know what to do during an emergency, who to call, where to meet, what to pack. Visit ready.gov/kids for tips and information. A public service announcement brought to you by FEMA and the Ad Council.
WMFO Medford 91.5 FM. You're listening to The Big Picture. I am Chase Belaine. With me, as always, is Derek Gary. We're going to be here with you till 9 o'clock. You've got us for just a tiny little bit more. Little boot. I'm going to say little bitch. God, that was a failure. But for our main topic tonight, we're going to talk about Fire and Fury, which was written by a gentleman who maybe didn't totally have all of his facts straight.
Michael Wolff?
Yes.
Okay. I want to do something a little different with this.
Okay.
And hopefully we'll see.
I was going to say, I feel weird bringing this in because I know you have something to say. That's why I was a little hesitant.
We'll see if you know the answer to this.
Oh, God.
Maybe you do, maybe you don't.
I love this game.
We're going to play Two Truths and a Lie.
Okay.
Everybody loves this game, Two Truths and a Lie. I'm going to give you three statements that are attributed to the million-selling national bestseller, The Fire and the Fury. Okay, two of these are actually in the book, one is not. So this is Two Truths and a Lie. Number one, Donald Trump demanded to know why he couldn't get the Gorilla Channel on his White House TV. So staffers edited nature shows and broadcast them into the presidential residence. Number two, Donald Trump eats fast food because he's afraid of being poisoned. Since fast food restaurants never know when he'll show up, he gets the same food as everyone else. Number three, Donald Trump demanded that locks be installed on his bedroom doors to keep the Secret Service out over the objections of the Secret Service.
So literally two of those things are true?
Yes. Two of those things are true. One of them is not.
I want to say the first one's the one that's not true.
You were correct. The Gorilla Channel
yes.
was actually created by a Twitter user making fun of the book. And it's more detailed than that. It was basically Donald Trump shows up and says, "Where is the Gorilla Channel?" And everybody's like, there's no Gorilla Channel. So they edited down some gorilla documentaries and put them on. And then Donald Trump said, why aren't the gorillas fighting? So then they re-edited them so that the gorillas would be fighting more often. And Donald Trump sits there at night and watches the gorillas fighting and comments on the fights between the gorillas.
The crazy thing is that I actually had to like sit and think about it. I had to sit there and be like, I mean, which one of these is the least believable?
But the other two are true.
Because I can't. Oh,
he had locks installed on the bedroom door for reasons that only he knows. And he eats fast food.
So no one sees him jerking it to. I don't know what Donald Trump would jerk it to.
And he eats fast food because he's afraid of being poisoned.
That I actually think is not a completely unfounded concern that he would have.
Now, the fact that you had to...
Given the chance.
The fact that you had to think about this...
Speaks volumes
to this book.
Well, what's interesting about this book is that there is obviously so much that is true. It's interesting to see the things that people are just poking at that are not, and like the things that people think are so relevant to bring up that are untrue. Like the New Yorker released an article about Michael Wolff in this book, talking about how he gave the wrong first name to somebody who went to the Four Seasons for breakfast.
Yeah.
That was a big scandal that he used the wrong first name for someone when they were going to the Four Seasons for breakfast.
Well, I think
there is a 1,200 word article about that.
And the thing about it is you don't have to dig that deep to find. Michael Wolff himself admits that the book is full of lies.
Oh, yeah.
In his preamble. And he says directly, many of the accounts of what has happened in the Trump White House are in conflict with one another. Many in Trumpian fashion are baldly untrue. That's what he opens with. He does not name a single source in the book. Apparently, he was sitting on a couch somewhere in the West Wing.
I was just bored.
For several months. They cornered him on CBS this morning on Monday and actually finally started getting some realistic answers out of the guy. Did he speak to a single cabinet member? No, he did not. Did he ever speak to Vice President Mike Pence? No, he did not. Did he speak to Donald Trump? Yes, and he goes back to the stock answer. I sat down with Donald Trump for 3 hours. I don't think he knew it was for the book. But Donald Trump is one of the most guarded people on the face of the planet. Whether he thinks you're interviewing him or not, he's going to parse what he says.
I would say, well, and on top of which, half of what comes out of his mouth is, I don't want to say that it's bull stuff, but because he's the president and I really don't feel like being, you know, needlessly prosecuted. But most of what comes out of Donald Trump's mouth is definitely fabricated in nature. Even if it's true, it's put forth in such a way that is, oh, well, you know, this sort of, you know, like it's all very
let's be
contrived.
Let's be fair and say that Donald Trump is frequently at odds with facts and reality.
Yes,
in the things that he says.
That's a more eloquent way of putting it. Thank you.
As are other people within his administration. I mean, and this is, Slate actually wrote a great takedown of this book, quote unquote. Because here's the book is a work of fiction. Let's start with that. The book is a work of fiction, as you said,
he does not deny.
No,
that's the best part, is that everyone's getting so angry about it, and he's like, no, I literally gave a disclaimer that this is untrue.
This is a work of fiction. This is wish fulfillment. This is confirmation bias as a New York Times bestseller. On its surface, that's what it is. Are there some grains of truth in this? Maybe there are.
Because, oh, absolutely.
Because it's pretty easy to imagine Melania Trump being upset about Donald Trump winning the presidency of the United States.
Well, and even
and not wanting to go to Washington and not wanting to live that life for the rest of her life.
Which is something that since 6 months ago, we've been discussing how I do feel bad for Melania, or however we pronounce her name, because she thought she was just marrying some Joe billionaire and was just going to be able to get mani pedis and massages and facials and go to fancy dinners and events and whatever for the rest of her life. And then suddenly it's like, oh my God, now I have to be the first lady of a country?
She's not taking this gig.
Yeah, she did not sign up for this.
No.
And I do love, well, what's great is that one of Wolf's main sources is actually Steve Bannon.
Right.
And he admits, again, he readily admits that everything is fabricated. Everything is, it's not even, I think a good way to describe it would be historical fiction, for lack of a better term, in that it is, a lot of it is based on actual facts and on actual things that have happened, actual viewpoints that certain actual people have. But as you said, he does preface everything by saying that this isn't a history book. This is...
Steve Bannon isn't an abusive relationship with the truth. I think this is the best way to describe that.
Yeah, that's definitely true.
But for the Trump haters out there, this is a dream come true. You know, because they're like, this book says everything that I want it to say. And that is your first sign that you should take it all with a grain of salt.
Oh, are you kidding me? For me, I hate Trump and I hate this book.
Nothing ever says everything. But you know people who are like, oh my God, did you see what's in the book? And we're going to have to listen to this and the Gorilla Channel for the rest of time now. But for all those of you who are foaming at the mouth and saying, oh no, he got it right. It's true. It's all true. It's everything here is exactly the way it happened. I want to put this thought into your head. If everything Michael Wolff said is true, then Hillary Clinton lost to somebody who didn't want to be president and arguably did not run a campaign to win the presidency.
I already thought that was true, though.
That speaks volumes about the state of disarray in the Democratic Party right now. And before you go celebrating this book too hard, you better think about that.
Well, and that's honestly, that's part of why I dislike this book, is I already thought that Donald Trump, when he initiated his campaign, was doing so to ruffle feathers. He had no intention of actually being elected president, at least at the start of it. And this book, because it's partially factual, partially fiction, it almost discredits, you make a good point, it almost discredits the left side of things.
Oh, it discredits all of your major media and the entire Democrat establishment.
Because that's what I'm saying, is because it's partially, it's half fact, half fiction, the fact that so many people are rallying around it is just a terrible example of, oh, see, look at these dummies. They think this is true. This just proves our point about how stupid they are. And not to speak for, there are definitely a bunch of liberals that are dummies.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
This is the kind of stunt that Bannon would pull.
But those of
just
us,
to make a point.
But those of us who are liberal and not stupid, it discredits us completely.
Yeah.
To have something be rallied around, and that's what I think is kind of the failure of the political system in our country in general, is the fact that we're just lumped into two groups, where it's like you're a Democrat or you're a Republican, you're a conservative or you're a liberal. And to have us lumped into two groups, it means that if a large amount of one of those groups that you're easily identified with feels a certain way about something, you're just tossed in there.
Yeah.
You're part of it.
Well, that's why the majority of Americans are independents and just vote, you know, the candidate and not the party.
Oh, yeah.
But
same with me.
Yeah.
But that's the thing, is that no matter, I mean, you call me a liberal, even though I'm fiscally conservative.
Yes. No, oh, but you're, yeah. But I mean, we're both socially liberal. So, you know,
yes,
we're both,
true.
We're both on board with women deciding what's best for their bodies. And
yay,
gay
abortion.
People getting
abortion's
married.
Number one.
We vary on gun rights, et cetera. But there is that very uncomfortable truth lying at the heart of this book, which is the Democratic Party got defeated by a charlatan who didn't even want the job.
Yeah, exactly.
Not a good
and
look.
That's why it makes us look stupid. And ironically, with something that theoretically should have been a triumph.
This is the same Democratic Party.
This should have looked cool for us, you know?
This is the same Democratic Party, by the way, that said the Republicans were dead after the midterm elections before Trump got elected. Or after Obama got reelected.
Again, why I'm not
and,
a Democrat.
And said, it's all over for the Republicans. It's done. America rejects them. Forget it. You will never see a Republican win anything again. Well, guess what? You put out what was supposed to be your best candidate. You pulled out all the stops to make sure she got the nomination. And you lost to a guy who didn't even want the job.
Why didn't we elect that Jewish guy from Vermont?
Where was Bernie? 855-915-9636. Run outside, tell the neighbors it's WMFO. You can write it in the snow on your lawn, WMFO, and then your neighbors will see that. It is the Big Picture. On the Tell Mikey D and the Boston music scene are just over 10 minutes away. But before we get to that, we have our favorite things from the past week and the strangest things here from the past week yet to come right here on WMFO Medford.
If you're a single man under the age of 35, you'd probably like to know what the ladies are looking for on an online dating site. A guy who had a few drinks and later got pulled over for buzz driving. See, that could cost you around $10,000 in fines, legal fees, and increased insurance rates. And doesn't a guy who's back living with his parents but calls them my roommates just scream, Mr. Right?
Buzzed, busted, and broke. Because buzz driving is drunk driving. A message from the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration and the Ad Council.
Everything is awesome.
MFO Medford 91.5 FM. You're listening to The Big Picture. I am Chase Belaine. With me, as always, is Derek Gary. We're about to wrap things up, but just before we do, we're going to talk about what's hot, which is our favorite things from the past or coming week. And I've got to say, I was super excited to find out, for those of you who live in the North Shore, Somerville area, they actually have a farmer's market during the winter, which is unbelievable. I just found out about this. They do it every Saturday from 9:30 to 2 p.m. at the Armory. And it's, you know, there's over 30 different vendors. You can get vegetables, you can get various kind of livestock type things and some crafts. And I am so excited to hear about this just because I thought that they didn't do that during the winter. And I'm so pumped that they do. And if you want to look into it, you can go to www.som, that's S-O-M, wintermarket.org, and get your freshness on, yo.
I believe it's the only farmer's market where you can buy frozen vegetables. But a bum. As I mentioned earlier in the show tonight, it was the Consumer Electronics Show out in Las Vegas. And when the power was not off, they were showing off all of the new technology that we won't be able to live without. I'm going to assume, Shay, that like the rest of us, you don't have a lot of use for a $16,000 robot that will fold your laundry.
Well, speak for yourself, Derek.
You may want it, but 16 grand for a laundry folding robot is more than most of us are willing to pay.
That's fair. I don't go above 10 on one of those.
And overall, looking at, you know, all the coverage that came out of CES this year, I was sort of like, meh, there really wasn't much of anything that was exciting, except for one thing, and I expect this is going to be a very popular item later this year. There is a company called, I've got the name of the product. I don't have the name of it. There's a new device coming out called the Power Spot. And what this is
sounds vaguely sexual.
It's Power Spot. It's going to cost about $100 when it comes out. It's going to be out in the third quarter of this year. And what you do is you just plug it in and leave it somewhere in your living room or your office or what have you. The Power Spot, by Power Source, actually, is the company that makes this, will charge all devices within an 80-foot radius.
What?
Without wires, without mats, without them having to be on top of the device. All you got to do is have it within an 80-foot radius.
That is utterly insane.
It uses FCC-approved wireless electricity to charge your devices.
I mean, that sounds really cool, but that also, I don't get how you don't get cancer from being near one of those.
Maybe you do. But that's a problem for another day.
For now.
For now. Wireless charging of all your devices.
Charging of all your stuff.
Just chuck the thing in the corner, and while you're using your cell phone, it's also charging.
No way. Oh, that is very cool. That's always been, ever since smartphones came out, that's always been my beef, because old cell phones, you could charge it while, like, the minute you plugged it in, it's on again.
Yeah.
With smartphones now, you have to wait.
Yeah. And its mine works while it's charging, but it's like, you've always got that thing where it's like, oh, I got to plug it in and charge it. And you're tethered to the wall.
Yeah, you're just standing there waiting for that annoying little battery with a little red line.
For those 2 or 3 hours or whatever it takes to charge it.
And it's actually like 15 minutes.
Now it's just like, throw it on a table at night. It's charged when you wake up in the morning. Throw it on the coffee table while you're watching TV. It's charged in a couple of hours.
2018, we're doing pretty good.
This is a device. This is a device that people are going to want. This is a device I strongly expect we're going to be talking about on the Black Friday show at the end of this year.
Mm-hmm. WMFO Medford. We are going to wrap up tonight's The Big Picture on 91.5 FM. Saying that's a thing that happened, which is the weirdest news story from this past week, in our humble opinions. For me, it's usually out of Florida, but tonight it is actually from our fair state of Massachusetts. Boston police say a man robbed a woman and her 10-year-old son at knife point before indecently exposing himself on Monday morning.
Who does that?
I mean, it sounds weird. I don't want to legitimize any indecent exposure, but the 10-year-old son, come on, man. The robbery happened around 6:30 a.m. in the 200 block of Paris Street in East Boston. Police say the victim, who was 43, and her son were leaving their home when the suspect, who had a folding knife, entered the stairwell area and told the victim to sit on the steps. He then took the money from the victim's purse before exposing himself and ordering the victims back upstairs. A neighbor who heard the commotion ran downstairs and yelled at the suspect, who then fled in a dark-colored sedan that was parked with its hazards on at the corner of Marion and Paris. The suspect described as a male with green eyes and yellow hair, about 6'2", with a muscular build, wearing all black, a black hat, and a black mask. Police said the sedan could be a Corolla or a Camry with a partial registration plate of 5FX. They're still actively investigating the incident, so if you have any information, contact Boston Police at 617-343-4234.
Guys, after you rob her, she does not want to see your junk.
Seriously, like, that's the thing, is I was like, do one or the other.
Yeah, you have to choose ahead of time. Either rob or expose yourself. You don't get to do both.